number of parents expressing concerns and confusion regarding smartphones and screen time is on the rise. As we learn more about what kids are seeing during screen time and what they're opting out of in order to spend time on screens, the worries are rising. What our parents need is a robust theological and practical response to these issues. Youth pastor Jake Beard decided to dive in to provide information, theological insights, and response strategies not just for parents, but for the entire adult population in his church. You can hear how Jake addressed the technology issue with integrity and depth as I chat with him on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller here at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, back in our studio, as I always am, with Chris Wagner, who's here. Chris, welcome. I don't know why I tell you welcome. You welcome me in here because you push all the buttons.
Here I am.
Right, yeah. So welcome. I'm glad you're here because we would not be doing this without you.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. So today, I'm really excited about the conversation we're going to have. Let me just give you a little background first. You know, people ask all the time, you know, how did you get started with CPYU? Because it was so long ago, and people want to know the story. How did you get into doing this? And I tell the story, I try to tell it briefly, that I was a youth pastor, very intentional back in the 1980s about helping parents understand first and foremost that they're the ones primarily responsible for the spiritual nurture of their kids. We're here to assist you. And that letting them know that we would serve them in any possible way that we could. We did not want to put ourselves in front of parents, but we wanted to be there to, as they leaned on us, hold them up and support them as we ministered alongside them to their kids. And as we did that, one of the things that happened in that church was a group of parents came to me and said, hey, we've got an issue, we've got a problem. The problem is this: we know we're to be the ones primarily responsible for the nurture of our kids, but we don't understand them. We don't understand their world. We don't understand the cultural context. I was thinking about that today because I just got an email from our church from a young family that's actually going into missions work. And as I was reading about their process of support raising, one of the things they have coming up in a few weeks is a month of cross-cultural training to get them ready for the field. And that's in effect what these parents were asking for back in the late 1980s. Give us some cross-cultural training. Can you help us understand their world? And so I took that challenge. As I always say, yes, we were supporting parents, but I much preferred to be with students in terms of teaching them than teaching parents. So this was sort of a new thing for me in terms of the amount of time and preparation and delivery that it took. But we started to speak week after week with parents about one particular aspect of youth culture. It hit a nerve for them. It was helpful for them. It was helpful for their kids. They were able to talk about things that mattered related to the culture. It helped equip them to be able to bring the truths of God's word to bear on the realities that exist. And long story short, or I should say long story longer, that grew into what we're doing today, a calling to begin and start and launch the Center for Parent Youth Understanding and do this full time. So I think people know that this is our, you know, mission here, to equip the ability of the home and church to nurture children and teens into a lifetime of biblically faithful whole life Christian discipleship. And we do this by providing information, analysis, and we endeavor to provide theologically sound, biblically faithful resources on today's rapidly changing youth culture in order to facilitate that effective cross-cultural communication. And so that's what we do here. And I was so excited when I got a report, actually, from my son-in-law and my daughter, who attend Springton Lake Presbyterian Church outside of Philadelphia, that their youth pastor, Jake Beer, who's also one of our CPYU research fellows and a friend, was doing a parent class several months ago, and it was on matters related to youth culture. And so I asked Jake, you know, hey, let me see what you're doing. And we have been so impressed here with what Jake was teaching. And this is what the reports were telling us as well. So it's not surprising that we got excited over this. And I said, Jake, we got to get you on the podcast. He is one of our research fellows. Jake is an ordained pastor in the Presbyterian Church in America. He's a graduate of Westminster Theological Seminary and a friend of ours. And I'm personally excited, not just to have him here, but my grandkids are coming into the youth group and under Jake's tutelage. So you can't leave, Jake. You can't leave there for several years. You're locked in. We've secured your contract, but I'm glad you're here. Welcome, Jake.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Jake, you know, I talked to you a little bit beforehand about this, and we're going to focus on one particular aspect of what you taught at 1 week. And, you know, we've had a chance to look at a few of the things that you've done, and the week that we're going to focus on here was one you did on technology in this class on youth and culture, and we're going to dig into that a little bit because your material is just awesome. But I want to back up a little bit, and I think hearing from you would be an encouragement to youth workers just as they think about, you know, can I speak to parents? How do I speak to parents? What do I say to parents? And so I want to ask you just a little bit about your philosophy of ministry to parents, how you're doing that there at Springton Lake, and what sort of results, you know, success and benefits you've seen from that.
Yeah, sure. Well, I don't know that I could say it much better than you did in your introduction. Yeah, coming into just as a youth pastor, realizing that I need to be a pastor to the parents just as much to the kids. You know, I believe that parents are the primary disciplers of their kids. It's what Deuteronomy 6 teaches and other passages. So parents bear the weight of responsibility before God to raise their kids in the nurture and fear of the Lord. But my role as a youth pastor is to come along and side them and support them in any way I can. In youth ministry, I sometimes kind of think of myself like a cheerleader. You know, I go to a lot of the kids' games and plays and musicals, and I'm just there to encourage them, support them, cheer them on. And I want to do that for parents, too. One of the ways that I have found to best support them is kind of like what you said with the origins of CPYU, which is just kind of translating the world of teens to parents who hear things from their kids, who see things in culture but don't really understand it or understand where it's coming from. So to make the world of teens intelligible to parents. And also, I think part of my role is helping parents see the spiritual issues that kind of lie behind the things that they see in culture, you know, the things that their kids are talking about. It's easy, I think, for adults just to kind of shake our heads and say, you know, kids these days are hopeless. They're not like we were when we were kids or whatever. But to see the underlying spiritual issues at play and then work together to apply biblical principles.
Yeah. That's great. You know, one of the things that I struggled with a long time ago was the attitude that parents had, you know, like, hey, I was a teenager, and now we're talking about a couple of generations ago, right? I'm talking about baby boomer parents right now, you know, who would say when they were raising their kids, you know, I was a teenager, we had all this stuff, but I turned out okay. So I kind of take this hands-off approach. I'm just going to let nature take its course. Everything will work out in the end, and everything will be okay. And we began to realize that, one, that's irresponsible. It's disobedient to what you just cited there as we think about Deuteronomy 6 and, as you mentioned, other passages that talk about the responsibilities of parents. But it doesn't work that way. You know, back then it didn't work. And when I was teaching on youth culture initially back in the 1980s, Jake, the stuff that you were teaching, you know, now and that we're talking about here at CPYU was unimaginable. I mean, we never talked about technology. We might talk about, you know, what are the songs they're listening to on the radio or what are they watching on television, but it's nothing like it was now. So as you're working with parents, what are you, I've got two questions for you on this related to the culture. As a boots on the ground guy there outside of Philadelphia, you know, what are you seeing as the big issues that parents are facing? You know, it's just you as an observer and you're spending time with students. And then secondarily, and there may be overlap here, what are the parents seeing? What are they verbalizing to you? What do they raise as some of the issues?
Yeah. I think the main issues would be the ones that I took on in this class. So technology, sexuality, and mental health. If I could add to that, I think a general sense of busyness. Parents and teens are busy, always on the move, and that leaves often, I think, little time for spiritual things or conversations, and even sometimes church gets kind of sidelined in the busyness of life. So I would see those as some of the main issues that we're facing with teens. From parents, I think parents kind of, they're reporting what they see, but can't connect it to the larger picture often. So, they know that their kid is spending too much time on their phone, or their kid is not adjusting well at a new school, not making friends, but maybe not connecting that to the larger issues of mental health, or what technology is actually doing to the to their kid. And often because often I think parents don't see that because we also can't see the effects in our own, on our own selves, right? We see that the kids spend too much time on their phones, but don't look too much at our own phone usage and how that's affecting ourselves. So it's hard for us to lead well when we are just as, having the same issues that our kids are facing.
Yeah, one of the things I like about how you approach this, Jake, is you're not just talking about, behavioral issues. Here's how to get your kids off the phone. And then, parents can say, oh, my kids are using their phones 10 hours less a week. And now I can put my head on the pillow at night and feel pretty good about myself because we're making progress. That would be what we call behavioral conformity, and we think everything's okay. What I like is that you address the heart issues as well. You want to get beneath all this, beneath the behaviors, beneath the symptomatic things, and get to the root issues of what's causing this stuff. And then also address those root issues so that it's not, the outcomes aren't behavioral conformity rooted in a desire just to please my parents. And then maybe when they're not around, I'll do what I want to do, which is the way many of us were as kids. But rather, you want to see heart change that results in conformity that brings honor and glory to God and is for the good of parents, the good of kids, while it's for God's own glory as well. So I like that you're doing that. And I often think that, as you're describing what you've done here, it's almost like, here at CPYU as well, we're kind of like Joshua and Caleb, right? Going in and surveying the land, trying to take a look and come back and report and say, here's what it is and here's what we need to do. And so I really, really appreciate about that. Describe for me again, you sort of hit this, but very quickly, for youth workers who maybe want to do something like what you did, you decided on 4 weeks, four topics. Explain the process for that and then a little bit about your preparation as well, because I know you prepared well, and I think you can teach folks how to prepare well, along with that.
Sure. So the class we called Youth and Culture, and it was 4 weeks in January. We combined all adult Sunday school classes for, we all met in the sanctuary for, this was the only option in
Wow.
January, was for the Youth and Culture class. Kids and students still met in their normal Sunday school classes, but all adults were combined. And I think the class really arose for me just kind of talking to our senior pastor and realizing that we needed something like this, that we needed to have kind of a pattern where we as a church think about issues related to youth and children, not just to staff, not just to pastors, but all together as a church. That comes out of a conviction when Paul, describes the church as a body and every member having a part. Well, adults need teens just as much as the teens need adults. It's one church, one body. It takes a village is kind of the old expression that, the best place for teens to grow in their faith is to be in the church, to have many relationships with spiritually mature adults who understand the issues that they're facing, who are able to connect with them. And so this class was really aimed at helping equip adults, whether they have kids in the youth ministry or not, to be the kind of people who could come along and support our students, and to at least treat them as, as what they are, as members of the body. Just as much if our teens are believing in Jesus, they have the same Holy Spirit, they have the same calling, the same hope, and so they are vital members of the church. They're not waiting to turn 18 before they suddenly become important. We need to treat them that way now.
Yeah. So you had a lot of grandparents then, and just adults who maybe aren't grandparents, but, you know, rubbing shoulders, rubbing elbows, or at least maybe being motivated now to rub shoulders and elbows with kids, at least when they're on site there at Springton Lake at the church. Was there a lot of buy-in, and what was the response from those who are not parents?
Yeah, I think we did have a lot of buy-in. A lot of people came to the class, whether they had kids or not. Certainly a lot of grandparents who were interested in just how do I relate to my grandkids. But also it was really encouraging, you know, even single adults in the church. Like, you might not have kids, but you have little brothers and sisters in Christ who need you to play a role in their lives. So that was kind of the pitch, and I think people really took to that. And we're interested, at least, in kind of understanding the next generation and then seeing their role as a part of the church and raising up the next generation for Christ.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I am going to want to, after a break, jump into the content. I want to start talking about some of what you taught with technology. But before we break, you know, as you come out of this, you know, what did you learn? What will you do differently? What would you do the same? And are you going to continue on with something like this in the future?
Yeah. My hope would be we would do every January, take all church or all adult Sunday school to take something on youth or children's ministry, take those 4 weeks at least together. And that, you know, I think that's not the only time that we should be talking about children's and youth ministry, but that's one time for us all to come together as a church and think about impacting the next generation. So I took away a lot of positives. People really resonated with it. I think saw things not just for their kids, but for themselves to take and to apply differently. And yeah, it took a lot of positives away from the class. Yeah. I think it got a lot of good conversations started.
Yeah,
at least.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, just with conversation. Did you have any time for discussion or Q&A during that time?
So coming out of January, we had a kind of follow-up discussion, like maybe 2 weeks after the class ended, if just anyone who was available after church could come, and we just had a conversation. And then we started a book club from one of the books that I recommended in the class, Digital Liturgies by Samuel James. So a handful of people signed up to do that, and then we read the book together and discussed and finished that up in, you know, late February.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm just going to commend you here. You know, I'll do this because it sounds like you've thought about a lot of different things. And so the planning that's gone into it is great. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to tap into what Jake taught, the approach that he took as he talked about technology, which is just huge, which was week two, I believe, of your youth and culture class. So we're going to take a break and we'll be back and continue our conversation with Jake Beer here on Youth Culture Matters.
If you enjoy listening to Youth Culture Matters and would like to support the ongoing efforts of this ministry, you can do so by visiting cpyu.org/giving to make a donation. Your prayers and financial support make this podcast possible.
So, Jake, as we jump into talking about technology, I know you didn't just make it all up. I mean, I've had a chance to read what you taught, and you obviously did some great preparation here. The temptation for us many times is to, you know, speak from the anecdotes, the things that we've seen, the things that we've experienced, the things that we've felt. And obviously that played into it, and that, I'm sure, sparked you quite a bit to address this topic and address it in the way that you did. But you did some pretty significant preparation. And before we jump into some of the content that you taught, tell us a little bit about how you prepared for this, because I think that would be a good encouragement and model to folks who would not only want to speak on technology, but anything else related to youth culture. We're firm believers here that you have to learn as much as you can before you open your mouth.
Sure. I think a lot of my thinking kind of came out of a number of just different reports that I think were pretty publicly available about, like, there was the movies on Netflix about The Social Network, and The Shallows was a book, I think, that
Nicholas Carr, right?
But then there are some particular books that I think really kind of took that that stream of thought and applied them in a lot of certain ways. So there's The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. Not a believer, but it's really interesting. In that book, he talks about technology and the issues that are, you know, it's in, our technology is causing kids to be more anxious and so on. And he's an atheist, but reaches for spiritual categories when he talks about these issues. He can't help himself but talk about it like a spiritual crisis. So that was important. And then Digital Liturgies by Samuel James was really helpful work. Going back a little bit, a couple of years now, but the TechWise family and the whole TechWise project by Andy Crouch was really influential. And then the Wisdom Pyramid by Brett McCracken was also helpful as well. So a lot of different thoughtful Christians who have taken on this issue, and I'm kind of just pulling them together for parents.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm going to mention, you know, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you know Chris is going to put all these things up underneath the player, links to all these resources that Jake's mentioning. And Chris, don't forget either, I mean, we've interviewed some of these guys and had conversations on some of this. You know, I remember the roundtable we had on the Anxious Generation, I believe. I can't remember if you were part of that, Jake, or not. It was some of the research fellows, I think. And we, you know, we talked through that. So these are all great recommendations. So you did some pretty intensive reading prior to, just as part of your preparation for this 1 hour that you taught. Let me ask you this. You know, you make a very strong statement in the beginning of what I'm reading here in terms of your outline, your script for your class that day on technology, that technology is behind the cultural and spiritual crises of our day. Talk a little bit about that and what you meant by that.
Sure. I think technology is the driving force behind our cultural and spiritual issues because we live in a digital world. Like the most significant events of culture, news, politics, entertainment, and even religion happen online. You know, when you're hearing about these major events, the way that everyone across the entire country knows about them is because they're all on their phones. They're seeing content online about it. So the most significant events in our culture take place online. And the technology has changed, I think, so rapidly in the past few years. And with that has changed kind of everything in our culture. And I think it's really important that we understand that and we you know, understand what we're really dealing with, because the speed of our technology is outpacing our wisdom to use it well. So we've always had cultural and spiritual issues. Of course, we're all sinners. If we didn't have the internet, if we didn't have technology, you know, we'd still have a lot of these issues. But the internet is, you know, it accelerates those problems. It presents more of them to our, especially to our kids. They're encountering things every day that many of us maybe never heard about until we were adults. And yet they're exposed earlier and earlier to all these kinds of things. In the one book I recommended, Digital Liturgies by Samuel James, he makes the case that the internet is an ecosystem or a habitat that makes practicing Christian virtue really hard. And of course, if we didn't have the internet, we would still have sin. We would still have issues. But there's something about the internet itself that actually exasperates a lot of these issues. So to take, you know, pornography, for example, we've always had to think about how we teach kids a biblical understanding of sexuality. But now it's pornography is available at your fingertips 24/7 all over the place. I think the average first exposure to pornography is usually listed as like 11 to 13. Mm-hmm. But I've seen some of those numbers go down as low as 8.
Yep.
And, you know, it's the technology itself in many ways that exasperates these issues. You know, kids today are no longer smuggling Playboy magazines. They are encountering stuff on the internet. And in many cases, some of the most extreme hardcore pornography before they even really understand what technology is. On the internet, it's not all that hard to find. And so porn has always been a problem, but our technology has made that problem, I think, in many ways, a lot worse. Or just to give another example, if I can, the issue of comparison. You know, teens have always been prone to compare themselves and, you know, prone to maybe jealousy or to, you know, to feeling inadequate about themselves, because they're going through puberty, they're awkward in their own bodies, they're constantly comparing themselves to their peers, but now they have technology in their pockets, which helps them, you know, which exposes them to people all around the world who they are constantly measuring themselves up against. When platforms like Instagram first began, there was, I think, a lot of concern among parents about, you know, teens comparing themselves to their friends, beauty standards, that kind of thing. There was the acronym FOMO, fear of missing out. Like, you know, all your friends went to a party, but you weren't invited, and now you feel really bummed about that and feel like you don't have friends. But now teens are not comparing themselves to their friends on Instagram. They are comparing themselves to full-time influencers and content creators who use makeup and filters and even professional camera setups that make them appear more glamorous than they really are. And so I think that creates a real sense of comparison, and it exasperates the issue that's already there for a lot of teens, especially teen girls, to compare themselves to others. It sets this completely unattainable standard because in many cases it's fake. They're using filters or all kinds of makeup or whatever. But so these, you know, girls are comparing themselves to others that they see on Instagram, these models, and feel that they are inadequate. And so spiritual issues like this have always existed, but our technology drives them forward and exasperates them. I think it's for that reason we need to think really critically about our technology and maybe even think differently about it than we are used to doing, to thinking about these issues in ways maybe a little bit different than we've done before.
Yeah. Boy, you said a lot of things there that really caught my attention, and I think you're spot on for sure. But right at the beginning, as you were chatting there, you were saying, yeah, I think you said this, I tried to write it down, the speed of the development is outpacing our wisdom of using it well in relationship to technology. And that is, I mean, that we got to grab onto that. We often speak here about, you know, the old Marshall McLuhan quote from way, way back in the last millennium. You know, and people thought he was nuts, you know, and yet he was spot on and very prophetic. And I think that statement you made was very prophetic. He said, you know, first we shape our tools and then our tools shape us. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is that we get excited about the tools and we integrate the tools into our lives without really thinking about what those tools are actually doing to us. And it's not just the content that's coming through the tools. It is the tool itself that's changing us and, you know, morphing us into something other than what we should be. And then that's when we start to lament. And one of my most told stories from the last couple of years, just as an example of what you're talking about, and this is why the class you taught is so important and why it's so important for us as youth workers to integrate these realities into our own lives, teach these things, adopt these things, practice these things, teach our students and our parents. The story was, I spoke on this digital discipleship at a church in New Jersey, and during the Q&A period at the end, a young dad sitting with his wife raised his hand. He said, I don't have a question. I want to make a statement. Our daughter is 11 years old. Last year, 10 years old, we bought her a phone. We put it in her hands because we believed we were protecting her from danger. And, you know, obviously when he said that, he was thinking about, you know, she can get a hold of me if something's going on, we can get a hold of her, that sort of thing. Then he proceeded to say, what I didn't realize is we were putting an even more grave danger in her hands. And now, you know, they're sitting there looking at each other with an 11-year-old wondering, how in the world do we peel back? And that's a very real issue for parents because, you know, you feel like you're stuck. Because you're going to get protest. You're going to get pushback when you decide, you know, this is an issue. We're going to take, quote unquote, the drug, in this case, you know, it would be technology or the smartphone, away from you. So, yeah, that was a good point. And I hope people hear what Jake said there because I think what has to happen is that the speed of our development of wisdom and our teaching on wisdom has to outpace the development of technology. And that's a very prophetic way, I think, of looking at things in terms of, you know, trying to be ahead of the curve and on the crest of the wave. I love the way that you, in your teaching, identified some of the unique challenges which you believe technology brings to the process of Christian discipleship, which is really what, you know, our youth ministries are about, evangelism and discipleship, you know, seeing people come to faith and then growing in their faith in Christ, you know, sanctification. What are some of those unique challenges that you think technology is bringing to Christian discipleship?
Well, for one thing, technology amplifies the voice of culture. Our technology as it is now amplifies the voice of culture. That's always been a concern for parents and Christian discipleship is, where, what, who is my kid, who are my kids listening to? What content are they being exposed to? Does it honor the Lord or not? Is it wise or not? But now we have smartphones and all kinds of, media apps that expose us to this constant slew of content creators and advertisements and influencers, all of which present in some way, shape, or form a version of the good life. What it means to be human, what it means to be successful, what beauty looks like. They are presenting all kinds of contradictory ideas about, what it really means to be human, that in many ways just go straight up against what God says in the Bible. And for teens, I think, who are already asking, big questions about themselves, these questions of identity, like who am I, where do I belong, and what am I for? They may never actually voice those questions out loud, but those are the questions, I think, at the heart of adolescence. They are looking for people to answer those questions for them. And there are plenty of people on the internet who will be glad to answer those questions by filling in the blank in every single way. You are your follower account. You are successful if you look like me and do the things that I do, whatever the case may be. Jesus says that he's the good shepherd and his sheep know his voice and they follow him. And yet everywhere we go, people have their AirPods in. Right. We spend far more time engaging with technology than we often do with our Bibles, or in prayer. And so I think in many ways, our technology just kind of makes Christian discipleship hard. I was really convicted when I was thinking about this because I realized how many times I wake up and my first instinct is to reach for my phone before my Bible or before sitting with the Lord a few minutes in prayer. This was an ingrained habit that reveals something deep about my spiritual condition. And these are real issues presented by technology. So the just simply the voices, I think, is one main issue. And maybe going off of that is just addiction, right? I think most people know that they're on their phones too much. But I think if we really look at ourselves, we can say it's not simply too much, it's excessive. It's way too much. I think the average sometimes cited is 4.5 hours of phone use daily. This is for all people, not just teens. But that's just your phone, let alone your laptop, your tablet, listening to a podcast while you go for a walk, whatever. And I think in a lot of ways, our technology fills every spare moment. You used to stand in the grocery store and have to look people in the eye and have a conversation with someone you're standing there. But now you try to do that, everybody's just on their phone. So you actually miss out on connection with other people. And it's not even all that uncommon to walk into a restaurant and see a family who everyone at the table is just on their phones, not actually talking and engaging with one another. So I think that that's, I think we really need to reckon with addiction, both in ourselves as parents and as adults. But then what we are exposing our kids to as well.
Yeah. Well, I got to admit, I mean, we say all the time here, don't let your kids sleep with their phones. And I do keep mine, maybe I'm a hypocrite here. I don't know. It's not that I'm checking it overnight, but I keep it there, sort of just in case something's, and I've got family members who are like a mom who's not doing well. So I want to be sure. I mean, I, but anyway, you have all that. But as you talked about waking up in the morning, I got to admit, as a sports fan who tends to go to bed early because I wake up super early, I did it this morning. As a Phillies fan, after all of their doggone losses, they had a walk-off win yesterday in the first game of a doubleheader. I turned the TV off, went to bed before the second game was over, and I wanted to know, did they win the game? Yes, they won the game. And so I will often do that. But you're right, I think about that. And there's the comparison thing when you're talking about that. There's something we do as well, and it's not just the appearance pressure that you mentioned there. But I don't know about you, but I think this is human nature. I do this, and I see people do this all the time, that when we see we have an issue with something, or we see we have a problem with something, or we're starting to have our eyes open to the fact that, yeah, this is indeed some sort of habitual sin or a broken desire or something we shouldn't do, we always think about someone who's worse. And then we assuage ourselves and say, well, it's not that bad. And that becomes an excuse to not address it and deal with it. But I, you know, there was something came to mind as you were talking. You know, I think about something I heard before smartphones back in the day when, and really before the internet, back in the day that you describe as looking at people in the eye in a grocery store. But something that I had a guy who was one of Keller's students from Westminster Seminary who was interning under me at the church I was at the time. And he told me something that Keller said, which, you know, when if you read anything from Keller now, you're going, oh, yeah, Keller said that. But he had said to his class, and this guy shared it with me, the intern, he said, Keller said that you tell me who or what it is you daydream about, and I'll tell you who or what your God is. And we could translate that into you tell me, you know, how you spend your time or how you spend your money, or get more specific and say you tell me about the role of technology in your life, and I'll tell you who or what your God or your idol is. And so I think there needs to be a ton of introspection on that. In this thing, there was something you did that I thought was really curious but really brilliant. You don't call it social media anymore. I mean, you're referring it to something else. You're calling it the web. Describe that, why you've made that shift.
Sure. Yeah, I think social media is an outdated term because at least in my experience and, you know, what I read from other people and hear from other people is that it's not really all that social anymore. You know, platforms like Facebook, when they first came out, and Instagram eventually then as well, they were meant to be these online extensions of real life. So you would follow your friends, you could connect with your old college roommate, or, you know, even family members that had moved across the country. And it was a way to communicate, keep up on photos and conversations, whatever. But now, at least in my experience, it's hard to find anyone that I actually know in real life on quote unquote social media. Yeah. So when I taught this in January, I shared the story that I scrolled down my Facebook feed, and between someone I actually knew in real life and another person I really knew, there was 55 posts in between that time. And, I forget the exact number, but it was a mix of ads and suggestions of content, content creators and influencers. It was a mix of all these other people, all these other voices and personalities and profiles that the algorithm suggested that maybe I would be interested in this kind of stuff. And so I just think social media is not that social anymore. When I go on these apps, it's not to be social. It's to scroll. It's to look at content. And I think this is even more true for our students. You know, most kids today are not on Facebook. Some are still on Instagram, but the big apps are like TikTok and YouTube, and, you know, a handful of others. And a lot of those apps are designed entirely to be private. You're not bumping into people that you know in real life and exchanging, you know, conversations or sharing videos or whatever. It's become a private experience where you are just simply exposed to content made by other people. So I think this is true, at least in my experience. Most teens don't make posts. They don't follow, or, you know, they don't like or leave comments very often. You know, the amount of people who leave comments on a video is a very small minority of the overall people who use the platform. And so most people are just kind of scrolling and consuming what other people have made. And so the social element, I think we kind of kid ourselves by calling it social media. It's not social anymore. It's just media. And, you know, it's coming at us with greater speed and quality than ever before. I think there's something really telling in the way that people online, you know, people who make a lot of this stuff call themselves content creators, right? You're no longer a writer who is writing an article, or a musician who made a song, or an artist who made some artwork and is sharing their art. You're all just content. It's all just given this one label of content, more grist for the mill, just kind of coming at you one after the other. And of course, maybe this is more than we can touch on today, but I think AI has made all that a whole lot worse. I think it's really interesting that our culture has picked up the term slop to describe AI content. If you think of slop for your feed, it's just more slop for the pig feed. It's coming down at you, you know, one video at a time. And so instead of calling it social media, I prefer to use the term the web. You know, that's a term from way back in like the 2000s. Every site is a website. We still call it that. The idea, I think, originally was that the whole world would be connected in this web through the internet. But I've come to see it more as what like a spider web is. It's a trap. It's a snare. These apps, in many cases, have been designed by experts to hook your attention, to steal as much time as possible. You know, a lot of that has come out pretty publicly in some of these reports, like the Shallows, and it's escaping me, the one on Netflix, the name of that one documentary.
Yeah, Social Network.
Social Network, yes. Yeah. So they've been designed to capture your attention, to keep you addicted so that you use the platform more and more. And so in a lot of ways, the internet has become a web which is designed to trap you and ensnare you.
This is so good, man. You're my grandkids' youth pastor. You are ruining all their fun. That's what you're doing. And you know what? I thank you for it. I think that's great. Just before we take another break, and when we come back, you've got some, some strategies. I'm going to have you share those very quickly as we finish out. But for the youth workers who are listening, you just came back from a retreat. What's the policy that you like to use for retreats, your youth group meetings, your social times with students? How do you encourage? Do you put up borders and boundaries? Do you have any rules on smartphones?
Sure. That's something I'm learning to do better. We have a blanket policy that students are not supposed to bring any technology on retreats, phone, like no phones, no headphones, nothing. But students still do. And so I had a couple issues where I had to take phones this past weekend from students. But they know up front that they're not supposed to bring it, and their parents are fully on board with me taking them if I have to. So
yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. And, I should mention, Jake's down there in Delaware County, the famous Delco outside of Philadelphia, which, man, that's a world unto itself, huh? Anyway, but Delco, Delaware County down there, and my grandkids go to Delaware County Christian School. We had Chad Fenley and Mark Dixon on here on the podcast last year, and we'll include a link to that because they started a no smartphone policy during the school day there, and it is very well thought with some background theology, very practical steps that they take. And like you said, I mean, everybody bought in for the most part. There may be a couple of, pushbackers, but for the most part, they all jumped in on that. And I have heard, I was talking to a friend yesterday and relaying, my son is a high school teacher west of here at a large school district. Man, the battles they've got to fight because of the kids with the phones in school, even in the classroom, and just trying to deal with that. But there is supposedly, according to my friends, some legislation that's going to pass through that's going to outlaw the use of phones in schools, perhaps as early as this coming school year, coming fall, the start of the school year in fall of 2026. So, yeah. Parents, that's a help, huh?
I was going to say New Jersey has passed a similar legislation.
Yeah, New Jersey. Birthplace of me, and that's where you were born, right?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. That's where, I won't say anything more about that. Jersey, right? All right, so this is great. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we want to get into some very practical steps that you can implement in your own life, in the life of your family, and even in the life of your youth group. We'll be right back. Parenting today can feel like trying to hit a moving target. With culture changing so fast, how do you help your kids navigate the difficult realities they face all to God's glory? Here at CPYU, we want to walk alongside you. That's why we've created a completely free resource just for you, our CPYU Parent Prompts. With each parent prompt, we look at a current youth culture trend and give you the background information you need to understand their world. But we don't just leave you with the facts. We provide biblically based, theologically sound insight into how God wants us to respond. Then we give you practical conversation starters to help you guide your kids into responding to the trend according to God's will and God's way. Understand the cultural trend, know the biblical truth, have the necessary nurturing conversation. Access our growing free archive of CPYU parent prompts right now at cpyu.org. And I want to remind everybody, you do need to go to our website, cpyu.org, because we began years ago an initiative, a digital discipleship, digital kids initiative. That initiative carries on, although maybe not under that name, with a lot of the resources that are there, which you can download and pass around to parents. They're pretty much all free downloads, and you can search. Chris has it set up where there's all sorts of topics that as you start to type those into the search bar, you'll see suggestions come up, but so many related to technology. And I do want to mention, we do these parent prompts, and Jake Beer's written one that really is, I love it because it starts with, in today's digital world, teenagers are being bombarded by a constant stream of marketing, especially in the form of fast fashion. So he has one on there on fast fashion. And this is one of the, you know, fallouts of technology. I mean, just we don't have time to go into what's going on with marketing and technology and, you know, digital fingerprints and recognition and, you know, curated prices for each individual person based on their online habits. That's all happening. But fast fashion is one of those as well. So go online. We'll include a link to that at the bottom of the player for this particular episode, which you can find at cpyu.org. So check out all those resources, and we'll put some other handouts up there as well. Jake, you always, and I think this is the way it's always got to end, is with application. And in that class that you taught, you not only gave them some great content to think about, but some action steps, three specific applications that you said are needed to protect our souls and to equip our students to resist the negative impacts of technology. You want to just go through those?
Yeah. Of the class, of the 4 weeks of the class, this talk on technology, I think, was the most, people said was most applicable to themselves, not even as, you know, for, they were thinking of their teens, but they were also just thinking of them, of themselves. So I hope that these ideas are helpful, not just for, you know, equipping parents to minister to students, but also just thinking through our own use of technology. So the first kind of application I would take is to put tech in its place. One of the biggest things is that I think we need to not just understand the web and think about it, but to actually have real action steps, new ways of engaging with technology that are actually going to help us to escape from the tendrils of the web. So the first application is to put tech in its place. I got to be honest, I'm kind of stealing this from Andy Crouch when he talks about this in the TechWise family. But our technology has made, our technology is everywhere. We carry smartphones in our pockets. Many of us have multiple devices in our cars or at our office, in our houses. And if we're not careful, those will always be on and always be calling us to engage with them. And so to put tech back in its proper place is to change how we engage with technology so that we don't do it automatically. We do it on purpose for sets amount of time with intention and not just engage out of habit or boredom or just, you know, because we're addicted. I think a lot of parents already track screen time for students, and that's really helpful. That shows you, you know, how your kids are using their screens. But we should not just track our time, but think carefully about how and when and where that we're using technology. And so to put tech in its place would be to put it in the proper place mentally and in our schedules, but then also to put it in physical places. Andy Crouch recommends keeping devices tied down to physical locations and not just carrying them all over the place. Our technology allows us to. We can carry our smartphone everywhere and have it connected to us like a third arm. But tying it down to a physical location, I think, helps us use it more intentionally when we do have to use it.
Yeah.
One of the ways that my family and I did this recently was we took our TV and just put it down in the basement and made like a movie theater room down there, so that when we decide as a family on purpose to go down and have a family movie night, we're still able to do that. But it's also not just up in our living room and the kids are constantly wanting to watch something simply because it's there all the time. So to tie down devices to physical places, I think, is really helpful. Another thing that Crouch recommends is not allowing personal devices in bedrooms or, just again, carrying it around all over the place with you. Not only does that guard against temptation, being on your phone, scrolling at night, going to who knows where on the internet. But it also restores the bedroom to its proper place, which is for teens to sleep and to rest, maybe read a book or something. So one of the things we need to do is put tech in its place, tie them down to physical places so we're not tempted to use them all the time for everything.
Yeah.
And really kind of think to ourselves, what can I do without? Do I really need to use my computer for this task, or can I just use a pen and notebook? Those are the kinds of questions we should ask.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing you include in there that you didn't mention, but I'll just hit it real quick. And we've talked about this in the past, is use a paper Bible, not a digital screen. Get a paper Bible in yours. There's numerous reasons why that's important. Context, seeing the whole flow of scripture. And not being distracted by your phone, the ways that we read differently on screens. And so I love that. What's the second one?
The second application would be to practice embodiment. I think one of the biggest dangers that technology presents to our discipleship is that it enables us and then encourages us to live in disembodied ways. When you are scrolling through your phone, you're not fully present in the room that you're in with the people that you're there with, but your mind is somewhere off, a million miles away, thinking about something else. And so that I think that that alienates us from the place that we're in and the people that they're there with. On the web, you can be, or at least pretend to be, anything and anybody that you want, but you're not really presenting yourself as who God made you to be, in the body that He gave you. So we practice embodiment.
That's awesome. Go ahead and jump into that third one.
So for the third application would be to pick what lasts. Pick what lasts. Most of the content on the web, we just talked about slop and content. Most of it that we're engaging with is probably not all that valuable, right? It's not the types of things that are going to be really making us wiser, more spiritual, more mature. Most of it is just pure entertainment. And so we need to pick what lasts, the things that are eternal rather than the things that are just here today and gone tomorrow. The content on the web, nobody goes back, rarely, I think, rarely goes back on YouTube and scrolls through reels that were made, 3 weeks ago or 3 months ago, because there's more content today. You just follow whatever the algorithm suggests to you. But if we intentionally realize that a lot of that stuff is not worthwhile, it's not going to make me more like Christ, then we can pick what lasts, the things that do last. And I just kind of gave some questions to think about for ourselves, right? Instead of skimming headlines, are we reading the whole article? Instead of maybe spending so many times reading articles, we're looking at books and even old books that have stood the test of time, that have wisdom to impart to us. Instead of scrolling through video after video in the short form, we can look to movies and, the real valuable works of art that maybe are in some of these really good movies. And the whole thing is just kind of like picking what is eternal over what is ephemeral, picking what lasts, pursuing what is good, true, and beautiful over the things that are just kind of coming at our feeds, and to do that with intention. Not just simply because the algorithm recommended it to us.
This is so good. You know what? Not only do I love that this is practical, but all of your practices are built on a solid theological foundation. As I'm sitting here listening to you, Jake, this is just one more example of how important it is for us in ministry to be fostering our own spiritual growth, our own knowledge, spending time in God's Word, studying theology, teaching our kids to do the same, because that's at the foundation of how we will address all of these issues that we face in the culture. So, yeah, this is so good. One thing I thought about in that last one about pick what lasts is you're talking about headlines. I was thinking about how the constant, the 24/7 news cycle that we're able to have. And it's not just on our phones, but you turn on, if you have cable TV or streaming services, you got how many news outlets are there out there? It's unbelievable, 24/7. And this stuff become it desensitizes us and actually becomes in some ways a form of entertainment. And I was just thinking, we were talking yesterday. I was talking with a friend about the whole, you know, White House Correspondents' Dinner and what happened there and the videos that popped up. And the questions we were asking each other, you know, like, was this real? Was this staged? We would never ask those things. And, you know, and I'm not saying it was or it wasn't. I'm just saying we would never ask those questions anytime prior. But we watch this and we get wrapped up in this, and we even get desensitized through the constant flow of violence, whether it's on news or entertainment, you know, to having a sensitivity to these things. And so you're right. This is stuff that wears us down. And so these suggestions that you make here are very, very helpful in allowing us to dig more deeply into our spiritual lives and building up. Jake, I want to thank you and just remind folks, keep an eye on our site, because we're going to be posting more of what Jake is doing, not only in this youth culture class, but some of the other things that he's writing along with some of our research fellows on our site. You can tap into those. And Jake, I want to say thank you for ministering to parents, because you're ministering to parents that I love, a child who's a parent. And thanks for ministering in ways that, you know, really are helping them with my grandchildren. And so I want to encourage others who are listening to do the same and do the hard work of preparation. That's what really, really pays off, and use good resources and build on theology. Jake, you want to give a final word to parents and youth workers? I always ask this, you know, just like a parting sentence or two as a result of your study and your experience and what we've talked about today.
Putting press
you on,
on
the spot here. Yeah, press on.
I would say press on, right? I said I want to be a cheerleader, so I would encourage parents to press on. The adolescent years are difficult, but they're also full of, I think, many opportunities. God is the one who designed adolescence, and he also gave us the resources in his word to minister to our students, to raise them in the fear and nurture of the Lord. And so we can press on together as youth ministers and as parents, walking alongside each other and raising up the next generation to love and follow Christ.
Yeah. Thanks, Jake. This is so good. That's a good word to end on. And I want to remind everybody, all the resources we've talked about here and more, we will include as links. If you go to cpyu.org, look for the player for this episode, scroll down underneath, and we'll have links to all those. Chris Wagner will put that on there just to make it easy for you to access so many of the good things that we're aware of that will be helpful for you. That's really what we want to do, is support you and encourage you here. So, Jake, thank you. Chris, thank you.
Yeah,
and
thanks,
for everyone who's listening, thank you for joining us. Share this with others. Spread the word about Youth Culture Matters. And we will catch you on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.